Theodore John Kaczynski, otherwise known as Ted Kaczynski, also known as the Unabomber, called the Unabomber because his first bomb was sent to a university, his second bomb was sent to an airlines, UNA, Unabomber. Born in 1942, raised in Evergreen Park, Illinois, southwest corner or edge of Chicago. He was a troubled youth. He had no social skills. He was pushed to excel. He was a child prodigy who entered Harvard at the age of 16. I don't know if it was all through school that he was 2 years ahead, but he was 2 years ahead through most years, at least from sixth grade on up. Thought of himself as a freak, had no friends. People like that turn inward. If he'd been feeding himself on healthy thoughts of other people, it would have been one thing, but he was inclined toward bitterness. He was drawn to the writings of others who felt the same way. He became his own worst enemy. He became the worst enemy of others who would suffer as a result of his anger. He earned his bachelor's from Harvard in 62, the age of 20, earned his master's and PhD in mathematics from the University of Michigan in 1964 and 67, respectively. After receiving his doctorate at the age of 25, he became assistant professor at the University of California, Berkeley. But 2 years later, in 1969, he resigned abruptly to pursue a primitive lifestyle. Then between 1978 and 1995, he killed three people. He injured 23 others in a nationwide bombing campaign targeting those involved with modern technology. He issued a social critique opposing industrialization and advancing a nature-centered form of anarchism. It's said that a life all wrapped up in itself makes a very small package. I think that's fitting in a number of ways to describe Kaczynski. It can be said that he became what he became because he followed his feelings. I understand that the things that he read shaped his thinking, but his feelings stirred up, dwelt upon, are what prompted him to seek to harm other people. I realize that all kinds of people have radical antisocial ideas but don't act on them, but all kinds of behaviors that are harmful to others, school shootings, rape, murder, abuse, and so forth, are because people allow their feelings to have full reign in their lives. Jeremiah 10:23 says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. We're going to look this evening at two accounts, both of them recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 13, if you'd like to turn there. Both of these show the danger of following your feelings, following your heart in that sense. The second account is born out of the first one. There are four main characters in these two accounts. I'll introduce the characters, ending with the focal character and the main character on which the account is focused. First of all, in verses 1 and 2, we read, After this it was so that Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. Verse 3 says, But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. Now, Jonadab was a very crafty man. We find Absalom, Tamar, Amnon, and Jonadab. Absalom was David's third-born son, and was the brother of Tamar in the account. Tamar, of course, was Absalom's sister. Both of these were half-brother, half-sister to Amnon. Tamar was the victim of rape in this account, of which I'm sure you're probably familiar. Amnon, who is the focal character, again, the half-brother of Tamar, the half-brother of Absalom, the perpetrator, the rapist in this account. And Jonadab, who's not the focal character, I threw him in, should have been third mentioned, but in the order that they're laid out in the text, he was Amnon's cousin, and he was the one who counseled Amnon regarding how to carry out his intentions. And so looking at verses 4 through 14, this is the account of Amnon raping Tamar. We're told in the first few verses that it says he loved her. We'll question that as we go through this account. It says he was so distressed in verse 2 over her that he became sick. And Jonadab, the very crafty cousin in verse 3, picks up on this and in verse 4 says to Amnon, "Why are you, the king's son, becoming thinner day after day? Will you not tell me?" And Amnon said to him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." Now, I think it's clear from what's going to be revealed that he doesn't love her in the true sense of love. He's attracted to her. He lusts for her. He desires her. But notice also, he says, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." That's quite interesting. He doesn't say, "I love my sister," but he distances himself from it, indicating that he feels guilty about it, that he recognizes an untruth here, which Jonadab corrects in verse 5 when he identifies her as Amnon's sister. Amnon plays along in verse 6 and also a little bit later than in the account. But this is some of the twisted thinking that goes on. Lust often masquerades itself as love, but love wants what is best for someone. Love does no harm, we're told in Romans 13 and verse 10. Amnon failed to realize that there's a fine line between selfish love and hatred. And that's shown later in the account as well. We can love someone and behave unlovingly toward them at times, but we cannot love them and seek to destroy them. And that's what Amnon ends up doing. He clearly did not love Tamar. He wanted her for his sexual pleasure. And we see the lack of love that he had for her after he got what he wanted down in verses 14 and following. Verses 5 and 6, Jonadab said to him, "Lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Please let my sister Tamar come and give me food and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat it from her hand.'" Verse 6, "Then Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill, and when the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, 'Please let Tamar, my sister, come.'" So he calls her his sister here, as Jonadab instructed. "Let my sister come and make a couple of cakes for me in my sight that I may eat from her hand." Verse 7, we're told that David sent home to Tamar saying, "Now go to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him." Of course, it's quite obvious here as Jonadab gives these instructions, lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. Is this the kind of honest counsel that you give to somebody who's truly in love and just loving somebody the way that they should, that's proper? Jonadab obviously knows what's going on here, and he assists, he counsels, he at least enables Amnon in carrying out his wishes. quite childish behavior here of Amnon. Send my sister that she may feed me, make cakes for me. And then we see the behavior gets even more absurd as the account goes. But David comes to visit him, and getting David involved in this was a way of also sharing the blame, if you will. David then sends information to Tamar in verse 7 and tells her to go and do this. And so by getting David involved, he shares part of the responsibility, at least in the mind of somebody like Amnon and the kind of thinking he's indulging in. In verse 8, we pick up, it says, so Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was lying down. Then she took flour and kneaded it, made cakes in his sight, and baked the cakes. And she took the pan and placed them out before him, but he refused to eat. Then Amnon said, have everyone go out from me. And they all went out from him. Then Amnon said to Tamar, bring the food into the bedroom that I may eat from your hand. Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them to Amnon, her brother, in the bedroom. Now, what is the reasonable need for this? And of course, that's obvious. But we're told in verse 11, when she had brought them to him to eat, he took hold of her hand, took hold of her, and said to her, come lie with me, my sister. She answered him, no, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. And I, where could I take my shame? And as for you, you would be like one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you. She's trying to be reasonable, which is an understandable thing, but we might say an unreasonable thing. You can't reason with somebody who's not allowing reason to enter the picture. When you're caught up in your feelings, which is what Amnon is doing here, you refuse to see the inevitable result of your desire. All you know is what you want. You're following your heart, if you will, your feelings, using those as synonyms. So she tries to reason with him. She tries to plead with him. She calls him a fool, or indicating that his behavior is going to make him a fool. She makes a statement. She says that, please speak to the king. He will not withhold me from you. The law of Moses commanded against any marriage between a half-brother and a half-sister, relatives, Leviticus chapter 18. Tamar probably knew this was unlawful. She likely said it simply as a ploy to get away from Amnon. Leviticus 18, verses 9 and 11 says, the nakedness of your sister, the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother, whether born at home or elsewhere, their nakedness you shall not uncover. The nakedness of your son's daughter or your daughter's daughter, their nakedness you shall not uncover, for theirs is your own nakedness. The nakedness of your father's wife's daughter, begotten by your father, she is your sister, you shall not uncover her nakedness. Verse 14 tells us, however, he would not heed her voice, and being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her. Then verses 15 through 18. Verse 15 says, then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. And Amnon said, And Amnon said to her, arise and be gone. And she said to him, no, indeed, this evil of sending me away is worse than the other that you did to me. But he would not listen to her. Then he called his servant who attended him and said, here, put this woman out away from me and bolt the door behind her. Now she had on a robe of many colors, for the king's virgin daughters wore such apparel. And his servant put her out and bolted the door behind her. So in verse 15, it says that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. That doesn't happen when you truly love somebody. This reveals Amnon's attraction to her, his, quote, love, unquote, for what it really was. It was lust. It was not love. Tamar was simply a reminder now of his foolish sin, and he wanted every reminder of her, of his sin, to be put far away. True love would never violate somebody's body for selfish gratification. That's, again, selfishness. It's not love. Tamar says in verse 16, she speaks of the evil of putting her away being worse than what he'd already done to her. There was a remedy here which would require some honor on his part. He could still redeem the situation with the kind of pushing the lines here of the law, but either by marrying her or paying her bride price, he could at least do that, pay the bride price in accordance with Exodus chapter 22. The payment, and we'll read that in a second, was meant to compensate for the fact would be, in this case, that Tamar was now less likely to be married because she was no longer a virgin. Exodus 22, 16 and 17 says, if a man entices a virgin who is betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely pay the bride price for her to be his wife. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the bride price of virgins. Sexual sins, like the kind here, cause severe damage. Treating somebody like an object is evidence of that. As he said in verse 17, he called his servant and said, put this woman out away from me. Tamar deserved better treatment just on the basis of being an Israelite. She deserved better treatment than that just on the basis of being a relative, being a sister, being a princess, being a human being. But his language is even more harsh perhaps than it may first appear on the reading. If your translation shows interpolations, in verse 17 there's an added word which is indicated by the italics. It says here, put this woman out. The word woman is added to the text. It's not in the Hebrew. So the text reads, put this out. We might insert the word thing there. Perhaps better would be the better idea. Put this thing out. Get rid of it. Far away from me. He doesn't say far, sorry. Away from me and bolt the door behind her. Following his feelings caused him to rape Tamar. And now instead of being honorable, he's following his feelings and treating her like something to be discarded. Which is what you would expect from somebody who would do such a terrible thing to begin with by following their feelings. They're certainly not likely to shift and all of a sudden become honorable. Verse 18 mentions a robe of many colors. As I understand, the Hebrew phrase here is indicates that it was a robe extending all the way down to the wrists and ankles as opposed to a shorter one. It was a garment of privilege. It was a garment of status, showing that the person didn't have to work much, if at all. And so Amnon was destroyed by his feelings. He destroyed Tamar's life by following his feelings. He nurtured his feelings in his heart until he finally acted on them. And following his feelings led him to rape his sister. And as we'll see in the next short account, it ultimately led to his own murder. In verses 19 through 22, We have Tamar going to her brother Absalom for comfort, and David becomes aware of the problem as well. Says verse 19, then Tamar put ashes on her head, tore her robe of many colors that was on her, laid her hand on her head, and went away crying bitterly. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now hold your peace, my sister. He's your brother. Do not take this thing to heart. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when David heard of all these things, he was very angry. Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. Some odd information here, odd behavior, it seems. We have Tamar tearing her robes, coming away, and when Absalom, apparently she goes to Absalom, he hears about it, he goes to her, however that occurs. Absalom, her brother, says in verse 20, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? That's obviously a euphemism for has he gone to bed with you? And then he tells her to hold her peace. It possibly indicates that she had stated maybe that she's going to go tell David. And he just cautions her to hold this in to herself and says a remarkable thing, do not take this thing to heart. Which maybe the way he said it came out a bit differently than the way that it reads, but that's kind of a very insensitive thing to say. How could you not take such a thing to your heart? But Absalom has a plan here, and Absalom's plan involves the same kind of thinking, the same kind of mentality, the same kind of attitude as his brother Amnon. Absalom is now going to follow his feelings. He's going to follow his heart. And we'll see that it leads him in the same destructive pattern as Amnon's did him. Verse 21 is a bit odd. When King David heard of all these things, he was very angry. Not a word said about him confronting Amnon. If he did, it's simply not recorded. Could it be that David's own guilt of his behavior kept him from speaking to Amnon about this? And then verse 22, which might sound remarkable until you realize what's going on in Absalom's mind. It says he spoke to his brother Amnon neither good nor bad, because Absalom has a plan. Because Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. And so Amnon's feelings of lust had turned into hatred for his sister Tamar after he raped her. Now Absalom's feelings of hatred will eventually give birth to murder. Verses 23 through 27 says, it came to pass after 2 full years, grudge-holding, revenge, hate often knows no time limits. Came after to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim, about 14 miles north of Jerusalem. So Absalom invited all the king's sons. Then Absalom came to the king and said, kindly note your servant has sheep shearers. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant. But the king said to Absalom, no, my son, let us not all go down, lest we be a burden to you. Then he urged him, but he would not go, and he blessed him. So he's having this festival. David had 17 sons in total, and he's invited all of them to come, and that's fine as far as it goes. Then he asks the king, perhaps knowing that the king would refuse the way that he did, for the reason that he did. He presses him further, maybe with his fingers crossed, that he's not going to take him up on it. And then after this, which you would think it would be assumed from verse 23 that he invited all the king's sons, you would think that Amnon would be included in that just automatically, but Absalom presses to make sure that Amnon goes. which was a little dangerous for his purpose, but he ended up working it out anyway. He says in verse 26, well, if not, if you and your men and all your the people that I've invited to come with you will not go, then let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said, being rightfully curious, why should he go with you? And Absalom urged him, so he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Probably thinking, well, if all of my other sons are going to be there, surely he's not going to do something. Verse 28, now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded, and all the king's sons arose, and each one got on his mule and fled. Absalom nurtured these feelings of hatred in his heart till he finally acted on them. Following his feelings led him to murder his own brother. And then you think about David and what David did compared with what Amnon and Absalom did. David unlawfully committed adultery with Bathsheba. Amnon unlawfully committed incest with or raped his own sister. David had arranged for Uriah the Hittite to be murdered by other men's hands. Like his father, Absalom arranged for Amnon to be murdered by other men's hands. As David committed adultery, made Uriah drunk, and then murdered him, Amnon committed incest, was made drunk, and Absalom murdered him. Little focus was placed on Jonadab throughout the account, but he played really a crucial role in all this. Some people don't like the limelight, but they do all kinds of damage in the background. I knew of a case some 10 or more years ago in a congregation where a lady was stirring things up with another lady, but insisted that she didn't have a dog in this fight. This isn't about me. The other lady was kind of speaking for her and working for her in trying to create problems and creating problems. Seems like Jonadab was a bit like that. Anybody in our lives who makes it easy for us to sin, anybody who in our lives who encourages us to sin is not a friend. And Jonadab may be an extreme case, but following his advice, Amnon became a rapist and ultimately was murdered. The name Tamar means palm tree, and it signifies fruitfulness. The name Absalom means his father's peace. The name Amnon means faithful and stable. Commentator John Trapp pointed out that none of these answered their names. From an online search of Follow Your Feelings, I came across a few articles of note. One article was called Want to Be Happy? Don't Follow Your Feelings by Gail Brenner. Says, I know what it's like to live a life driven by emotion, and believe me, it won't make you happy. Someone shows up late and you're triggered by fear and anger. You get some negative feedback, you sulk in sadness, you live in anxiety, chewing on thoughts about what will happen next and if it will be okay. It's like you're a yo-yo on a string, with your happiness tied to all the circumstances in your life that you cannot control. If you ask me, this is no way to live. From an online article of Psychology Today by Christine Meinecke, PhD, she's entitled Bad Advice, Follow Your Heart. Following this cliched advice is far from harmless. The first A few short paragraphs. She says, Alice will be sorely missed, it seems. According to those mourning her passing, she was a fount of emotional support and timeless advice such as, follow your heart. Who's Alice? A soap opera grandmother whose eulogy I recently overheard. So why is follow your heart bad advice? How could this soap opera approved conventional wisdom be problematic? It sounds so hopeful, sounds so harmless. Although following your heart or your feelings can be useful while information gathering, she says, following your heart in decision making does disservice. Following the accounts we've seen, I think it would be more appropriate to say following your heart or your feelings in decision making can be quite dangerous. Letting our emotions control us can be one of the scariest things that we can do. Someone has said if we all followed our feelings, we'd all be in jail in 30 days. And I think that's probably more true. I think that sounds unreasonable, but just the next time you feel like slapping something, just go ahead and slap them. The next time you feel, see where it leads. And see if there's not maybe more truth in that statement than there's not. Jeremiah 17, verse 9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? One of the most needed lessons in life is that emotions and feelings do not trump everything else. The prodigal son certainly followed his feelings. How'd that work out for him? And in fact, it's interesting how when he finished following his feelings, because reality finally set in, the text tells us that he came to himself. New International Version says, when he came to his senses. It at least implies that he had not been himself, that sin is a sort of insanity. Came across some what I might call worldly refrigerator door wisdom. Another little search on the internet. Follow your feelings and then pull up the images that you get there. The first one says, do you ever get that something tells me that I should type of feeling? That's your intuition speaking to you. Listen to it. Follow it. Your intuition is right. I didn't see a name appended to that, but I think it was maybe Ted Kaczynski who said that. The next one says, trust your intuition. You don't need to explain or justify your feelings to anyone. Just trust your own inner guidance. It knows best. Again, no name. Maybe Amnon. Maybe Amnon penned that little gem. You know the truth by the way it feels. Maybe Absalom wrote that one. The next one is signed. It says, follow your feelings. If it feels right, move forward. If it doesn't feel right, don't do it. I don't know if you can see the name there, but that's Oprah Winfrey. How about this? Without thee, O Lord, what am I but a guide to my own destruction? How about Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25, both saying the same thing? There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. The moment we start trusting our feelings and living our life according to our feelings is the moment that our life begins to fall apart. Let's put our trust in the Lord. Let's stand together and sing.